There are 39 milahot, which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 High FM.
This is Soul to Soul on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Baha'al Leisach HaTov Shin Pei Dalet, and a very, very warm welcome to all of our radio family. Thank you for taking time on what is nearly the shortest Friday of the year as we prepare for another beautiful, beautiful Shabbos Kodesh. Baruch Hashem, such a beautiful, been a geschmacked week, and now we prepare for an even more beautiful, beautiful Shabbos. As always, our program today is brought to you, L'Refu Shleima, for the Cholim of Klai Yisrael, in particular, Chaim ben Rezel, Shmuel Simcha ben Freida, Yaakov ben Chaya, Naomi bas Chaya Lea, Chaya Shena bas Rezel, and Rus Basya bas Chaya Bela, B'seich Shor Choli Yisrael Meitaka, the zechus of the Torah we're learning together, and the zechus of all the chesed, all the wonderful things that Klai Yisrael is doing, be a zechus for refuah shleima, b'kor of mamish, for all the cholim, both those here, those in Eretz Yisrael, those anywhere in the world. So the parsha begins with the parsha of the menorah, and it says, Vayas Kein Aaron. Aaron did exactly kasher tziva Hashem as Moshe, exactly as Hashem had commanded Moshe. And of course, Rashi, one of the most famous Rashis in the Torah is lahagid shvochay shel Aaron sheloishina, to tell the praise of Aaron in that he did not deviate. This statement, of course, needs to be clarified. Would it enter anyone's imagination to suggest that Aaron might have deviated from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command? So a number of explanations are said about what Rashi's statement. So the Sifsech Hasidus, he has a sort of twist on the definition of the word Shina, to deviate. It says, when we take into consideration that Aaron would prepare and light the menorah twice daily, it might be appropriate to say that he never got tired of his function. The same passion and love that he manifested in the morning, he repeated it in the afternoon when he lit the candles. This went on day in and day out. The upteenth sort of time was no different than the first time that he lit the menorah. Thus, loy shina is derived from shone, to revise, to review, to repeat, right? To be redundant. Every time Aaron stepped forward to light the candles was a new opportunity, not a repeat performance. In his hesped of Rav Aaron Kotler, so the Satna Rav offered his own explanation of Rashi's comment. It's true that for an ordinary person to follow the command to the letter of the law is acceptable. It's with regard to someone who is literally at the apex of spirituality, one who had an acute understanding of the mitzvah and all the esoteric sort of secrets that are connected to it, whose devotion to seeing the institution of the Messiah achieve even greater spiritual influence, that Sheloi Shina plays an even more crucial role. He has every reason to enhance the mitzvah. Aaron HaKohen had every reason to innovate the Avodah, even so slightly. He might have been able to reach one whose affiliation had been at best modest. Aaron, however, understood that regardless of his own understanding of the situation, Hashem had a deeper, more penetrating perspective. Thus, one does not deviate from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decree. The Satna Rav explained that Rav Aaron could have instituted changes that would make Torah more acceptable to those on the fringe. He did not, because one follows the Messiah, the tradition, as indicated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. His spiritual integrity guaranteed that the Torah taught in yeshivas has remained pristine and pure. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on the radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Beha'aloisecha Tov Shin Pei Dalet. As we prepare for another amazing, amazing Shabbos, and I think to match the amazing Shabbos, we have some amazing Divrei Torah to speak about today. So, of course, the first mitzvah in this week's parasha is, of course, the lighting of the menorah and the Mishkan, which, of course, then also happened in the Beis HaMikdash. And the pasuk says, Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Da'aber Aaron, speak to Aaron, Va'omar Tolav, and say to him, Ba'aloyschos HaNeres, when you kindle the lamps, El mul pnei ha-menorah, towards the face of the menorah, shall the seven lamps give their light. Vayaskein Aaron, and Aaron did exactly that. Kasher tzivah Hashem as Moshe, as Hashem commanded Moshe, and he kindled its lamps as Hashem had commanded him. Now Rashi wants to know, why does the Torah juxtapose the passages of the menorah with the parsha describing the contributing of the Nesiim, right? The princes we learned about in the end of last week's parsha who brought all their kabbonis. As he says, because when Aaron saw the inauguration of the Nesiim, he was quite disheartened, for he didn't participate with them in the inauguration, not he nor his shevet. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, I swear by your life, your contribution is greater than theirs, for you're going to kindle and prepare the menorah's lamps. And all the commentaries, each in their own kind of way, try to explain how exactly Aaron's contribution was superior to the contribution of the Nesiim. Besides that, we need to focus on a detail that was specified by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the lights of the menorah have to be el mul pnei ha-menorah, towards the face of the menorah shall the seven lamps cast light. So the Ramban's explanation, he says that the six lamps affixed permanently to the six branches extended out from the body of the menorah all faced the central lamp, which sat above the sort of the main branch of the menorah. This central lamp faced the Kodesh HaKadoshim and was called the Ner Maravi, the western lamp. Apparently, the Rambam's explanation is based on the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, in Gemara Menachos, Daf Tzadiches, that the menorah was positioned in the Beis HaMikdash from north to south. Now, the pasuk related to the mitzvah of lighting the menorah actually says, "Ba'oyam oed nichutz la'proiches," should put it outside the proiches. Yarech ois Aaron uvana me'erev ad boiker lefnei Hashem. It has to be in the oyam oed, outside of the proiches that is near the Kodesh Kodashim. Aaron and his sons shall arrange it from evening until morning before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this indicates that one of the lamps must face Hashem, i.e. must face the Shechina located in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is to the west. More specifically, the middle lamp had to face west towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Therefore, it's referred to as the Ner Maravi, the Western lamp. So we need to sort of perhaps elaborate on that to get a better understanding of the whole matter. Now, let's begin to shed some light on the subject by examining the preparations made by Yaakov Avinu when he fled his brother Esav. Instead of going directly to Haran, he first, we know, he secluded himself in the Beis Medrash of Eiver for 14 years, studying Torah day and night. Rashi points this out in his commentary at the end of Parshas Toldos. His source is the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin, which says, "For it was taught in a brisa, Yaakov was hidden away in the academy of Eiver for 14 years." Rashi also points out when the Torah informs us that Yaakov slept at the site of the future Beis HaMikdash, right? And he says, he lay there in that place, and he says, that teaches us that this was the first time in the entire 14 years that he had actually lain down to sleep. During the 14 years, if he happened to slumber, to fall asleep at his sort of shtender, he did, but otherwise, he learned all the time. Now, the Mefarshim are perplexed by this comment. After all, throughout the 63 years that Yaakov grew up and lived with his parents, Yitzchak and Rivka, he studied in the Beis Medrash of Shem and Eiver. As it's written, Yaakov Ishtam Yoishev Oyalim. Yaakov was a sort of wholesome man who lived in the tents. Rashi explains that this refers to the tents of Shem and Eiver. So this then begs the question, why did Yaakov Avinu see fit to spend another 14 years studying in the Beis HaMedrash of Eiver before going to Haran? He already spent so many years studying Torah. We find an intriguing answer to this question in the words of the Imre Yosef in Parshas Vayetzeh. Says, during these 14 years, Yaakov Avinu worked on perfecting the seven midas. During the first 7 years, he learned how to annul all the negative aspects of the seven midas. Whereas during the second period of 7 years, years 8 to 14, so he spent his time there, he learned how to use them for the sake of Kedusha. Therefore, he remained there specifically for 14 years. So we need to expand on what he's saying based on a text in Parshas Miketz. Now we know in Miketz, Paro had dreams, right? That what was his dreams? So first of all, he was standing on the bank of the river, and behold, there were seven cows of beautiful appearance and a robust flesh that came out of the river. And then they were grazing there in the swamp. Then behold, seven other cows emerged from the river after them, and they were really of poor appearance, and they were kind of had no flesh on them. And they stood next to the cows on the bank of the river. Then the cows of poor appearance and gaunt flesh ate the seven robust cows of beautiful appearance, and Paro awoke. Now, here is the interpretation of the dream from the Zohar HaKadosh. The Zohar HaKadosh says, Rabbi Yitzchak teaches that the seven robust cows represent the superior human qualities and characteristics that emanate from Kedusha. While the Nebuch, the poor, unhealthy, emaciated-looking cows, they represent the negative, the kind of lowly qualities and characteristics that emanate from the forces of Tumah. Again, let's try to get some clarity. Every Yid possesses the Midas of Kedusha so that he can use them to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Chesed. So Chesed teaches us that you can teach, that you can treat everyone with love. With Gevura, one can overcome one's Yetzer and serve Hashem with fear and reverence. With Teferes, one recognizes that the only true splendor in life is achieved through Torah and the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. With the Midah of Netzach, so one defeats one's Yetzara. With Hod, one acknowledges and thanks Hashem for all the good one has been granted. With Yisayid, one attaches oneself, right, securely to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with Malchus, one affirms the sovereignty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu over all of one's limbs and sinews. In contrast, the seven Midas emanating from the Klipa, from the Tumah, and its forces of evil oppose the seven Midas of Kedusha in keeping with the statement of Chazal of Koheles, where it says Zelu Matze Os Hashem created the world with corresponding equal and opposite forces. We're going to come back and open this up a little bit more. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. Please stay with us. We're just getting started.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul, back on your radio, Erev Shabbos, Kodesh Parshas, Behalos, Chatov, Shin, Pei, Dalet. We are talking about the seven Koli Midas that go all the way from Chesed to Malchus, that every person has the potential to use for his Avodas Hashem, and Chas V'Shalom, their counterparts that can drag a person down to the lowest level. So let's now begin to explain Paro's dream with this understanding. So there were cows of very poor appearance, and they looked terrible, and they ate the seven good cows, the seven beautiful cows. Clearly, the sole desire and goal of the Tumah, of the Klipos, is to cause a Jew to do Averis and stumble. Instead of serving Hashem with the seven Midas of Kedusha, they want him to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chas V'Shalom with the seven Midas of Tumah, living a life of earthly pleasures and kind of almost a debauchery. Right? Therefore, the negative, unholy Midas swallow the sparks of Kedusha embodied by the seven Midas of Kedusha. They are sustained by the Kedusha. If we look at it a bit of further consideration, so it appears that this helps explain what we have learned in the following Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says, the Yetzara has seven names. HaKadosh Baruch Hu called it evil, Ra. David called it impure, Tamei. Shlema called it the enemy, right? A Sine, right? Yeshaya called it an obstacle, right? A Mikshol, right? Yecheskel called it a stone, right? Evan. Yoel called it the hidden one, the Tzifoni, as it says in Yoel, and I will distance the hidden one from you. And the Mashah actually explains that these applications refer to seven distinct aspects or forces of the Yetzirah, right, corresponding to the 7 days of creation. Each name is associated with a specific category of Avera. Right? So, is referring to, of course, these seven midas, these seven character traits. HaKadosh Baruch Hu ingrained in every human being these traits. Right? Chesed, Gevura, Tferes, Netzach, Hoyd, Yisoid, and Malchus are all there. Each of these midas possesses a good side, which of course is related to Kedusha, and of course a bad side related to Tumah. The Maharsha's explanation concurs with what is actually taught in Pardes Shimonim, in the name of many, many of the early Chachamim. Each of the days of the week aligns with one of the seven Midas. This is the significance of the seven names of the Etzara. It has seven evil forces that cause a Yid to sin with one of these seven negative Midas. This explains so nicely a statement, again, in the Gemara in Kedushin, where the Gemara says that a person's Yetzara renews itself against him every single day. And Rav Shimon ben Levi said, a person's Yetzara overwhelms him every day and attempts to kill him. Right? It appears that they are both teaching us the same thing, that on each of the 7 days of the week, the Yetzirah utilizes one of its respective forces of Tumah, reflecting one of its seven names. So, it's as if there is a new Yetzirah every day attacking a person, trying to cause him to sin each day with a different, distinct midah. So now, we can perhaps better appreciate the incredible lesson taught by the Imre Yosef. Before leaving to go to Choron, Yaakov Avinu secluded himself in the Beis Medrash of Eivet to study Torah for another 14 years. 7 years to learn how to combat and eliminate the seven midas of the Tumah, i.e. avoiding all the bad, improper behaviors, and 7 years to establish and perfect the seven midas reflecting Kedusha. So let's add a little bit of salt and pepper to this. So why was it important to Yaakov Avinu to first do tshuva, to rectify his seven midas specifically before embarking for Choron? In truth, he had already worked on the tikkun of his personal midas during his last 63 years before that. Now, however, he was embarking on a new venture to go establish the foundation of the future generations of Klal Yisrael, right? The B'nai Yisrael, right? The descendants of the 12 Shvatim. Therefore, in order to do such holy work, they too need to refine their seven midas, both learning to avoid the bad behavior, which comes from the forces of evil, and learning to perform good deeds and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu based on the seven midas of Kedusha. So continuing on the same path, now let's go back to where we started, to the mark, to the remark HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes to Aaron HaKohen, to make him feel better, to encourage him. I swear by your life, your contribution is greater than theirs, for you will kindle and prepare the menorah's lamps. So it's important to note that the korbanos brought by the Nesiim, right, consecrated the actual the Mizbeach, the outside Mizbeach, located in the Ezra Yisrael. Aaron HaKohen, on the other hand, kindled the menorah, which was located in the Heichal, right, the much more internal, holier location. Furthermore, in the Etz Chaim, we're taught that we were commanded to offer korbanos of animals because human sin originates from man's kind of animalistic soul, right? What we call the nefesh bahamis. Now, this part of the nefesh is a mixture of good and evil. Therefore, by sacrificing an animal to atone for the influence of the nefesh habahamis, so therefore we are kind of symbolically burning, incinerating the negative, evil part of our being to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Arizal also explains this in the Tamiya Mitzvahs. He says, someone who does an Avera and then sacrifices an animal as a korban because the animalistic soul caused him to do the Avera. Therefore, a heavenly fire descends and incinerates those Averas. Then, the root of the animalistic soul in the person is cleansed and purified because everything is kind of comes from one source, and the person receives atonement at that point. So let's now see the incredible, inspirational words of Rav Chaim of Sanz in Divrei Chaim, where he says, based on a pasuk in Vayikra, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban Hashem, if a person from among you will bring a korban to Hashem from the cattle and from the sheep, right? You shall bring a korban to Hashem. So he says as follows. So the concept of a korban is well known. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not need to consume it. In his infinite wisdom, he issued the decree to bring a human being closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazal of blessed memory explained that the Kedusha of the fire on the Mizbeach consumes the material tendencies of the animal. This affects a corresponding change in the person's animalistic soul. As a result of this tshuva and kind of a harata that a person does in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu while the korban is being sacrificed, so the person's animalistic force and tendencies are completely broken and burnt. Thus, he connects with the force of Kedusha. This is the implication of the pasuk, right? When a person, Adam ki yakriv mikem, when a person brings from amongst you, namely, when a yid offers a korban, he should have in mind to sacrifice that portion within his being to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thus, the korban consumes the corruption of the animalistic soul within him and elevates the human portion within him to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if we apply this to the korbanos brought by the Nesiim, as the Chanukah Sabayis to concentrate the Mizbeach, so they intended to imbue all Yidden with the ability to resist the seven Midas of the Tumah, enabling them to avoid bad behavior. Sur Meira, turn away from evil. Therefore, their contribution was offered on the outside Mizbeach in the Ezras Yisrael. This exemplifies the teaching of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says, whoever slaughters his Yetzer and confesses on its account, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers it as if he honored HaKadosh Baruch Hu in both worlds, Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. For it's written, the Pasuk in Tehillim Nun, he who offers confession honors me. In other words, whoever conquers his Yetzirah, it is viewed as if he actually has slaughtered it. In contrast, Aaron HaKohen kindled the menorah in Le'echel, the inner chamber. Thus, he illuminated for all of Israel the seven midas through a light of Kedusha, imbuing all of those midas with the ability and the capacity to do good. Asay Toiv. Right? To substantiate this explanation, let's refer to, again, to the teachings of the Bala Tanya in Torah, where he writes that the seven lamps correspond to the seven midas. The lamps are the midas. Every mida has a corresponding part both in Tumah and in the realm of Kedusha. In fact, the midas of the Tumah are nourished from the Kedusha. So the Ava of Kedusha, right, kind of degenerates into a material lust. Similarly, Yira of Kedusha can kasushom denigrate into the negative fear and anger. Right? It is required for us to refine our midas and transform them into elements of Kedusha, so that all of the midas actually serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This explains very nicely HaKadosh Baruch Hu's words to encouragement. It says, I swear by your life, your contribution is even greater than the contribution of the Nesim, because you're going to kindle and prepare the light. In other words, the Nesim offered Karbanos on the outer Mizbeach to get rid of the negative evil side of the seven Midas and imbue Yisrael with the quality of Sur Merah, the ability to control themselves and stop doing Averis. Your contribution, however, Aaron, is superior to those. By preparing and lighting the menorah, you infuse the seven Midas with Kedusha, imbuing Klal Yisrael with the exemplary, admirable quality of Vasei Toiv. Continuing on this journey, so now let's focus on the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, El Mul Pnei HaMenorah Yo'iru Shivas HaNeros, right? Towards the faces of the menorah shall the seven lamps cast their light. Now, according to the Rambam, this means that the six lateral lamps had to be affixed so that they all face the central western lamp. Perhaps we could even suggest an explanation for the special significance of the middle lamp, which can also be described as the fourth lamp. Now, if the lamps align with the seven midas, then the middle lamp represents, of course, the midah of Netzach, the fourth midah. This midah is the attribute of Nitzachon, of victory. In a sense, one could argue that Netzach is the most crucial of all the midas, for, as you already have learnt, we said, Yitzray shel Adam mischadish shelo b'choyon. The Yetzara tries to renew its effort against a human being every single day. Therefore, accordingly, this means that a person must battle the Yetzara constantly just to survive. From this perspective, the Midah of Netzach is the central and most important of the Midas, since a person must overcome and defeat the Yetzirah daily in order to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the other six Midas. This explains fantastically why Noam HaElimelech and Noam Yisrael both teach that the seven lamps of the menorah align with the seven holy visitors, the seven shepherds: Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David. According to this scheme, the fourth lamp corresponds to the fourth shepherd, namely Moshe Rabbeinu, right, who is the personification of the Midah of Netzach. To clarify the association of Moshe Rabbeinu with the Midah of Netzach, so let's refer to what the Gemara says, where there in Sanhedrin HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yisrael, "My son, I created the Yetzara, and I've created Torah as its antidote. If you engage in Torah study, you will not be delivered into his hands." In other words, the only way to defeat the Yetzara is through Torah study. Now, as we know, Moshe Rabbeinu transmitted the Torah to Yisrael, as it's written, right? Torah tziva lanu Moshe Marashe kiz Yaakov. He gave us the heritage. Moshe Rabbeinu personifies the Midah of Netzach because victory over the Yetzara can only be achieved with the Torah, which he transmitted to Klal Yisrael. So now we can understand why the Ner Maravi, the middle lamp, had to face the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Because after all, the two Luchai Sabris, we know, were housed in the Aron, located in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Torah was disseminated from there to all of Yisrael. As the Pasuk says in Shemois, right? I'm going to arrange a meeting with you, and I will speak to you there from atop of the Kapiris, from between the two Keruvim that are on the Aron of the Bris, right? And through there, I will teach you all the teachings of Bnei Yisrael. In other words, the middle lamp, which represents the Midah of Netzach, Moshe Rabbeinu's Midah, faced the Kodesh HaKadoshim to emphasize the fact that it is impossible to defeat the Yetzirah without engaging in the holy study of Torah. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parashas Beha Aleisecha, Tov Shin Pei Dalet. As we prepare for another amazing Shabbos, Baruch Hashem, Shechyonu V'Kiyamonu V'Gyonu HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us the schus to get through another week and arrive at another Shabbos Kodesh, a day of Kedusha Menucha, a day of where we're able to really recharge ourselves and return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and just leave this world that's so full of challenge and so full of rubbish behind, and really just focus on our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As we always do at this time, just to give you the very, very important times you need to know for this coming Shabbos. So this afternoon, the earliest time to light your candles is really just about over an hour and a half ago, at 4:19. 4:19 is the earliest time that you can light your Shabbos candles. It's a great, great opportunity, great, great sort of goal to try to reach. We can get our houses ready, we can get ourselves ready, we can get all the food hot and prepared and be able to accept the Shabbos at the earliest time. We're looking forward to it, we're expecting it, we're anticipating it, we're waiting for it. So let's grab it with both hands as soon as we possibly can. Yes, it's a bit of a challenge, but with a bit of forethought and a bit of planning and a bit of organization and leaving behind all the usual nonsense that sometimes takes place on a Friday afternoon, we can actually do it, and we can bring Shabbos into our home at the earliest possible moment. If for whatever reason we're not able to do that, and many people I'm sure won't be, you can always try, even a few minutes early. Right, the latest time for lighting candles this Shabbos is 7 minutes past five. 5:07 is the deadline for lighting our Shabbos candles this afternoon. But if you can't manage to do it at 4:19, so try a few minutes early. Try at 5 o'clock. Try at 10 to 5. Even a few minutes early just shows our Kodesh Baruch Hu that we're really, really keen to get into the Shabbos, to have the Shabbos as soon as we possibly can, and to really make it part of our lives. So let's go for that. So 5:07 is the absolutely latest time for lighting candles, and which means that then Shkia is at 5:25. Please do not rely on that time between the latest candle lighting time and Shkia. That is only there for an absolute emergency situation. God forbid someone's stuck on the road or whatever, some other kind of major situation. Then we have that time to rely on. Otherwise, we have to consider 5:07 as the absolute deadline for having our house ready, ourselves ready, our food ready, the keys up to the car put away, and Shabbos prevails in our homes. So 5:25 is Shkia. Therefore, if you want to be able to daven Ma'ariv and say Krishma after night, all you have to do is wait until 5:43. 5:43 is already night, according to the most opinions, and you can already then daven Ma'ariv. Most shuls will not even daven Ma'ariv by that time. You can say the Krishma, come home, and we still have a lovely, lovely long night together with the family to sit and eat and enjoy and sing and say some Divrei Torah and talk about the week, talk about the great miracles we heard about, we experienced ourselves in the past week, where we clearly saw the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Talk about it. Let's get strength. Let's get chizuk from that. And then, of course, after the meal, there's plenty of time to do something worthwhile. Sit and take a sefer, or learn with the kids, or do something. Don't just waste the time. As I say, you can still get to bed at a reasonable hour and get certainly a croissant of sleep, maybe even more than that if you really need. But don't just waste away the whole day by frivolously sleeping and stuff like that. There's a long parsha with Rashi to get through. Please utilize the time. Those of us who are unfortunately during the week are so busy with other things. So Shabbos, Gemara says Shabbos is the time that we can make up and spend time learning. Let's make sure we do that. Tomorrow, of course, is Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Bahaleska. Beautiful, beautiful parsha. Lots of really important topics. Lots of dramatic things go on in this week's parsha. Lots to talk about, and of course the Haftarah is the appropriate one for Shabbos Balaischa, particularly dealing with the Menorah, which is the very first subject of our parsha, the Haftarah from the book of Zechariah, which we also read on Shabbos Chanukah, being as it does deal with the Menorah. Otherwise, Shabbos carries on. Beautiful Shabbos. This week we are learning again Perek Beis, the second Perek of Pirkei Avos, as we go through our second cycle of Pirkei Avos for the year. Take the time to open a book, learn a bit, learn the Mishnayos, learn a bit of the commentary. There's so much wealth of information, so much beautiful, beautiful Musa and great, important teachings that we can learn from that. And Shabbos is already a little bit longer. Shabbos Kodesh ends tomorrow night at 5:59, 1 minute before 6 o'clock, and we go into another beautiful, beautiful week. Bez Hashem of bracha and hatzlacha and all sorts of wonderful, wonderful things. Actually, next week is going to be Shabbos Mevarchim already. We are dealing with the care of clothing on Shabbos. And just a couple of things that to wrap up, Bez Hashem, we're going to finish this area today. So the malachas are pertaining to taking care of clothing, particularly the issue of whether or not one can fold a talis on Shabbos, and a few other halachas also that are very, very important. Now, Chazal forbade us to fold any kind of an item of clothing on Shabbos in its actual fold, the way it's normally folded, because folding helps a garment maintain its actual shape, and ensures that it's kind of, once a garment has its right shape, then it kind of ensures that it's able to sit properly on the body, and definitely prevents the garment from wrinkling and getting creased. So therefore, when one folds clothes properly, it looks like one is actually fixing a kli, which we'll talk about later on in a few weeks' time, about fixing a kli, because I'm ensuring that it's going to remain kind of spiffy and not get messed up in any kind of way. Only if one has a new white garment that he can sort of fold by himself, and he plans it to wear it again on Shabbos, because he has no other appropriate clothing, then he can fold it on the Shabbos, as the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Yud Gimel says. So, based on this Gemara, some of the Poskim prohibit folding a talis after we finish davening. Why? Because it's not going to be worn again that Shabbos, and therefore folding it constitutes preparing on Shabbos for the weekday. Right? If a person is lucky enough to have a special talis that he wears only for Shabbos, then it's as if you're preparing on one Shabbos for the next Shabbos, right? Furthermore, sort of, if the talis is not a new talis, so one may not fold it, because the act of actually folding it, right, which actually more significant even than folding a new item, right? Because it really will keep its shape. It will help it to remain nice. Now, some who are really careful follow this position and do not fold their talisim on Shabbos. You take it off, you sort of put it in a pile, and after Shabbos, by Ma'ariv on Moitzei Shabbos, that's the time. Then we go and fold our talisim, put them away, check the tzitzis, so that we know that they're kosher to wear either the next morning or the next Shabbos, and that's the way we need to do it. There is a minority opinion that says that folding that Chazal are talking about is not the kind of folding we do, and it's in fact it's covered for the talis to fold it. But generally speaking, the prevailing minig is that we don't fold our talisim until after Shabbos. Okay, we're going to come back with some closing comments in a moment. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul, and this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, Soul to Soul, back on the radio, Erev Shabbos, Kodesh, Parshas, Baleis, Ketav, Shem, Peidal. We're talking about folding talisim, and I guess the middle position, kind of which most poets can follow, is that a talis can be folded on Shabbos as long as it's not folded along the lines of the original creases. Right? The prohibition of folding clothes on Shabbos applies only when they are folded according to sort of set folds, as long as the folding does not follow those kind of ironed folds exactly. Now, it's not similar to the melacha of a metake mana, and it's not really prohibited. That's actually the halacha, and the Mishnah Berurah brings it down in Shin Beis, as does the Benish Achai. Now, it should be noted that in practice today, Talias are ironed in a way that makes them difficult to fold exactly as they were at the start. Therefore, you can fold your talis, right? But just not exactly the way the creases go. A hat that got misshapen may be reshaped or straightened out on Shabbos. That's because it is a very simple thing to do and is not considered fixing a kli. The poskim have a machlekes that disagree whether one may fold sort of paper into sort of forms such as little boats or airplanes, or to fold serviettes into special shapes. One who is lenient has on whom to rely, and one who wants to be strict should be commended, as we'll see a little bit later. So that really concludes our discussion on tear of clothes, on the sort of care of clothing. We're going to speak a little bit next week about the melacha of toifer, of sewing, also very important and very, very relevant melacha. But as we get to the end of our show now, again, I want to really take the opportunity of thanking everyone for really taking the time and availing themselves of the opportunity, put on their radio, put on their device, wherever you might be in the car, be in the kitchen, and how much we really appreciate that you do listen, and I would appreciate even more if you would somehow give me some feedback, let me know what you enjoy, what you don't enjoy, what you want more of, what you want less of, so of course we can try to kind of pinpoint this year to fulfill the desires and get the most out of it for each one of our listeners, of all of our radio family. But in the meantime, we're going to scurry off and get our Shabbos ready. And I just want to wish each one of you an amazing, beautiful Shabbos Shalom for you and the family. Time of love, time of togetherness, fine of unity, a fine of inspiration, Be'ez Hashem, for us and for all of Klai Yisrael. To each of our radio family, a good Geben Shabbos.